This is Perspectives, a podcast developed by Horizons, who's a top community college's student-run newspaper.
Hi, I'm Brandon Buscelli, and I'm here today with Cody Quinn, co-editor-in-chief of Houstonic Horizons. And today we're going to talk about an article he wrote recently called Yes We Can. We're going to switch things up. Usually he's the one questioning other people, but today I'm going to be questioning him for a little bit.
Apparently I've done something wrong to deserve this.
It was definitely something. So, all right. So in this recent article, you basically endorse presidential candidate Barack Obama.
Indeed.
You said some things about him saying, essentially, I guess, that it was his message and the fact that people trust him that makes him such a viable candidate.
Yeah, and throughout history, there have been periods of time where candidates like Barack Obama, not necessarily the most experienced, but those who are flexible, who have plans, who are good speakers, who motivate people, have come to the presidency and have done great things. Not people bring up FDR, but that's kind of incorrect because he was a governor for a long time. He did good things for New York during the Depression. But Kennedy served one term in the Senate before running for president. My favorite example is Abraham Lincoln, who ran a very contested primary.
That was actually somebody I was going to bring up with you, because I wasn't sure if you had even known that. People did say that he was too inexperienced. That was one of the problems with his candidacy.
And to talk about Lincoln, because I'm one of his biggest fans, he ran in the primaries against a very experienced politician, William Henry Seward, who became the Secretary of State under Lincoln. And it was the same arguments. But again, Seward was a very divisive candidate. 50% of the country didn't like him, and that's eventually why he lost the primary to the inexperienced Lincoln. That and the backroom deals they used to do all the time back then.
Not to mention that Lincoln himself was a great orator.
Mm-hmm. Which always helps in politics. Who knew?
Always. You know what else I think is interesting, too, just drawing connections between the two, since we're talking about it, is the fact that were it not for Lincoln, there's a very good possibility that Obama would not be possible as a candidate right now.
That's an extreme, because the way the country was headed, you know, you think there had to have been a civil war eventually, and it depends on the flop and how that turns out. But yeah, no, I get your point. It's true. Lincoln...
This is true. I mean, it's part of the argument about history, whether it's people being in the right place at the right time, or...
Yeah, well, it is somebody being in the right place at the right time to help steer us through something that was going to happen anyways. And hopefully Obama's like that. I'm pulling for the guy.
Well, we'll see. Okay, well, yesterday, civil rights leader John Lewis dropped his support for Hillary Clinton and endorsed Barack Obama. Recently, Connecticut Senator Christopher Dodd did the same thing. Well, he didn't abandon Clinton, but...
He finally backed a candidate.
Exactly. So what do you think about all these people rallying behind him, especially, you know, prominent leaders like that? These people are super delegates, which means that, first of all, they don't have to back anybody in particular right now. Mm-hmm. And secondly, they're not even going to be voting until the Democratic convention.
Well, it's really a twofold question because these are two different people. Senator Chris Dodd, a long Democratic establishment type person. The other one was Lewis, right? Mm-hmm. A representative from Georgia. A congressman from Georgia,
right.
House representative. But the difference being, you know, especially with the superdelegates, people seeing how this election could possibly turn out and how contested it could be with the superdelegates, the kind of what they're seeing from the people is we don't want this decided by superdelegates. If it comes down to that, it's really going to fracture the party. And on the other hand, if it becomes more contested as it goes along, it comes down to Michigan and Florida, again, you're going to have an instance where the party could fracture under... undue stress, especially from the, I don't want to say especially from the Clinton campaign, but she would be the one in desperate measures at that point.
Interesting.
But, well, there's, sorry, just a little more there. But they're afraid. So yeah, the superdelegate Lewis from a county that heavily supported Barack Obama is going to switch because he wants to seem like it's coming from the people, not from the superdelegates. And Chris Dodd wants to, I'm guessing, because I'm not Chris Dodd, wants to keep the party together. So he wants to get this over with as soon as possible. So he's probably backing Barack Obama for those reasons.
You know, it's interesting what you say about Lewis. He's actually running against, what's his name? Reverend Markle Hutchins, who is a young Atlanta minister right now.
Really?
And yeah, and in an article from the Associated Press as of yesterday, Hutchins was quoted as saying that today's announcement by Representative Lewis was clearly prompted by political expediency. So that's how he saw this switch, mm-hmm. As him just going with what his constituency wanted.
And it's certainly what it looks like at this point, because if he said, you guys voted for Barack, if he told his constituents, you guys are voting for Barack, but I'm going to vote for Hillary, and if Hillary doesn't win, you know, he's going to be in a lot of hurt come the election time.
So what does that mean for a candidate's backers' values, do you think? I mean, do you think that his switching of people represents a sort of political expediency, or do you think that he's just changed his mind about who he thinks is actually the better candidate?
I'm with you there. It's probably more of a political expediency thing, but again, I'm pretty sure his constituents appreciate that more than anything else. Like, they understand before the primary came, when he backed Clinton, they're like, all right, that's his opinion. But we've spoken, and now he's going to speak with us, and that's what you want out of a candidate. And again, it would speak very ill of him if he didn't do that.
Okay, nice. Another interesting thing, the upcoming elections in Rhode Island, Vermont, Ohio, and Texas.
I like how you led with Vermont and Rhode Island there, because nobody does that. Everyone's focused on Texas and Ohio at this point.
Well, you know, they're just as important.
They're small, but there's people there too, right?
Exactly. And it all adds up.
It does.
Besides, if we were to discount them, then we might as well discount Connecticut too, which I
never
want
to do. And
let's
not do that. Big fan of Connecticut. I live here.
That's true. Now, Rhode Island and Vermont right now, they're pretty much... Vermont, it seems to be going for Obama, and Rhode Island seems to be going mostly for Clinton.
See, that's news to me, because in this whole Texas-Ohio thing, those two states really have gotten lost in the news. I haven't seen any polling results
for
them at all.
Actually, I have results right here. If you
what are our percentages?
Two different.
Rhode Island. Wow, he's getting spanked in Rhode Island.
Yeah, Vermont, he's doing quite well, though.
Oh, wow. I'll be damned.
It's almost...
It's a flip there, huh?
Yeah. But I guess the real news, though, is his closing the gap in Texas.
Yeah. Well, you see it. That's the thing. You see things like this coming. If people who have been following the elections, and I hate to say following the polls, not the polls before an election, but mostly the polls after election, mm-hmm. Anytime Barack Obama goes to, any state he goes to, he closes that gap instantly. Hillary starts out with these huge leads. She started out with huge leads in California, and though he lost California... He closed the gap by 8 points, I believe. Wisconsin, she was leading in the polls before he got there. Even after the Potomac primary, he closed the gap and actually soundly defeated her in Wisconsin.
True.
So I wouldn't be surprised come election day. You know, it'll be a wider margin than a lot of people think. Ohio, that's the one that's up in the air to me. But Texas, I do feel like he's going to come through with that one.
I was actually just going to ask you about Ohio, because he has been campaigning there too, but he doesn't seem to have made as many inroads.
Well, I'm not going to speak ill of people, because that's wrong, and my mom raised me right. But, no, it's the type of person that lives in Ohio, it's the blue-collar, people who've seen a lot, who've been through a lot.
Right.
Understandably so, you go through layoffs, you go through factory closings. You want things that seem concrete. You don't want to say, well, he's talking new ideas, but it's not something to grab onto. And I understand that argument about Obama. And that's something I can live with personally, but for them, it's a different argument. So they're like, Clinton sounds like she knows what she's going to do. Regardless of the realities of that, she sounds like she knows what she's going to do. So,
right.
So they're more entrenched into that. And it's a harder sell to make.
It's an interesting take to have on that.
Okay, I appreciate the word interesting.
Speaking of Obama making inroads in general, he's obviously, at this point, leading in the national polls. He's got more delegates at this point.
More popular vote, too.
Yeah, more states, more popular vote. He's doing pretty well for himself.
Certainly doesn't need my support at this point.
Well, if you weren't to give it to him, and everybody else was not to give it to him, for the same reason of, you know, each person saying that they didn't need it, that might change things.
Yeah, he'd be in a world of hurt.
But that's not the case, so. In a recent blog article by Don Balls, I think I'm pronouncing that right. It's B-A-L-Z.
If only I knew, I would have changed it to that.
Yeah, it's from the WashingtonPost.com.
Mm-hmm.
He talks about the latest debate between Clinton and Obama.
Yeah.
And in it, in his blog post, he brings up the changes in the debate style since the beginning of both candidates' run for president. One of the things he mentions is that when the race began, there were 7 people up there, all participating in the short soundbite debate answers.
Yep.
And Obama didn't seem to shine nearly as much as he does now.
No, and it was a tough sell trying to convince people on Obama at that point because they didn't see that impressiveness. But sorry, go on.
No, that's totally fine. In the article, Dan says, Obama said something that, as I look back on it, explains why he has appeared more comfortable and effective as a debater the longer the campaign has gone on. Not only has he become more confident in his own skills, the two-person setting plays to what he believes are his own strengths. And then the quote from Obama is, I think that having a different format would benefit me, he said in that August interview. There's no doubt that if we had more of a conversation, or if we had a round table and it was a little more open-ended, and maybe we structured it so that it focused on one topic, it would play to my strengths. And there's no doubt that the sort of soundbite debate style, some candidates have mastered the art more than I have.
And that's a truth, isn't it? It's a reality. You see that a lot with experienced politicians where they can toss off one-liners, but and again, they can't give really great speeches. Look at John McCain as a good instance of that. You know, he could say, I can't even think of an example right now. Put a placeholder there. You can say one line.
My friends.
Yeah, and if you try to watch a speech from him, it's completely different. What did he say the other day? I've got news for you, Barack Obama. Al-Qaeda is in Iraq,
right.
But then again, if you've ever watched his whole town hall meetings, they're very long, they're kind of dry, they're rambling. But when you have somebody who's a little more eloquent, who uses a lot more language, who has a more nuanced language, trying to condense that in a soundbite, it's much more difficult, especially if you're not practiced at it. And if he's inexperienced at anything, I'd say he's inexperienced at that. And that's not such a bad thing, is it?
I personally don't think so. I suppose that's up to the voters to decide. But they don't seem to think so either.
Oh.
On the flip side of that, do you think that that might be part of what's hurting Clinton? The fact that she can't toss out quick answers like that,
she
actually has to get in depth in her answers.
It's not that she can't. She's done it. She's gotten booed for it. She's like, we want change we can have, not change you can Xerox. And there you go. That's what happens when you have a one-liner and a backfire or something. That's not an in-depth answer. It's not an in-depth response. But what I think happened to Clinton is she's from a very different style of politics, an older style of politics. And when it comes up this new machine, it doesn't adjust well. It's social Darwinism, so to speak.
Cool. All right. Now, I have here, and I just want to have you comment a little bit on some of the policies and issues that Obama talks about on his own website.
Mm-hmm.
So, the first one here, he wants to expand flexible work arrangements. I thought this was kind of odd, but interesting. Obama will create a program to inform businesses about the benefits of flexible work schedules, help businesses create flexible work opportunities, and increase federal incentives for telecommuting. He will also make the federal government a model employer in terms of adopting flexible work schedules and permitting employees to request flexible arrangements.
Flex time.
Yeah.
Yes, I've heard of flex time.
I know it's very popular in Europe.
And who doesn't like Europe?
It's true.
For me personally, being someone who doesn't wake up very well, I'd appreciate that, but no, there is an inherent logic in it, because the way we have our hours scheduled now, it's still basically a farm system. We're
right.
Based on agricultural day hours, and as our needs have shifted, when you talk about schooling hours, you don't have time to spend with your family, you know, maybe something like flex time would benefit you more. I haven't seen the studies on it, but I do think it's a different, it's an innovative idea, especially as we move towards specialty trade, away from manufacturing
right.
trade. When you talk office work, things like that, you don't really need to be in at a certain time. Does it benefit you more to be there at 9 a.m. or does it benefit you more to be there at 5 p.m.?
This is something I actually experienced at my own job,
yeah.
Interestingly enough. I think I'm going to stop using the word interesting.
Fascinating?
Sure, why not?
I've got a thesaurus kicking around this office somewhere.
That's okay. I'm sure I can come up with words on my own.
It's just doing it on the fly. That's the hard part.
Speaking on the war in Iraq, he says that he immediately wants to begin removing our troops from Iraq, saying that he will remove 1 to 2 combat brigades each month and have all of our combat brigades out of Iraq within 16 months, mm-hmm. minus whoever has to stay there
to mop up or
yeah,
security
to guard things and things like that. He also says that he will launch the most aggressive diplomatic effort in recent American history to reach a new compact on the stability of Iraq in the Middle East. He wants to bring Iran and Syria in on this and secure Iraq's borders, keep neighboring countries from meddling, isolate Al-Qaeda, all those kinds of things. Now, what do you think about, and this is actually something that's come up recently with the whole changing regime in Cuba,
yep.
Where he said that he would be willing to talk with Raul Castro or whoever else is in there, even though they might not be particularly friendly towards America. And same thing with Iran and Syria in this case. Now, what do you think of this kind of diplomacy?
I think it's brilliant, really, because we are more in a war of ideas than a physical war, because
mm-hmm.
we're fighting an ideology, and we're fighting a certain type of government that feeds off of us being a certain type of people. And George Bush is really fed into this, because Iran has a growing youth population that's actually not anti-American. And people seem to miss this part. And you know who eventually rules the country? It's the youth. We grow up and we grow into power.
It's true.
So what better way to say that, you know, we're not all that bad. We're willing to talk to you. We're not the bad guys here. And we're not. Then going over and making that statement. You know, we're willing to talk to you. We're not going to be the ones firing the first shot. We're going to be the ones talking. If anybody's going to start the war, it'll be you, because you can't accept us.
That sort of gives you a way to stand, take the high road, I guess, in that situation.
And especially in a war of ideas, that's what you need to do. Because we are being blasted by Hugo Chavez, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad,
yeah.
It's one of the tough names for me to pronounce. For being, you know, arrogant, for being imperialist,
right.
Things like that. And to get along in the world, yes, it's going to take a more diplomatic approach. Yes, it's going to take a more open approach. And out of the candidates we have so far, the ones who've spoken so far, I feel like Obama's the one who would actually take that step and say, you know what, we need to be realistic about this.
Speaking of people seeing us as imperialistic and...
Great word. I've been hearing it thrown around a lot about us.
It's... I wonder why.
I don't feel like we like war enough to be imperialistic, but that's just my personal opinion.
I think we'd probably have to try to take over more countries, but I'm not sure if maybe...
I mean, we don't even like the countries we've almost kind of taken over as it is. It's like, we're in Iraq. If we were real imperialists, we'd be everybody, not 36%. We'd be like, we need to stay there and hold this for what?
Right.
We just aren't built that way, I suppose.
I think it may be more for lack of a better term, honestly.
Yeah.
No, because the way that America goes in and acts in other countries is not similar to anything historically precedented.
No, it's not. And our country has evolved a lot, and it'll continue to evolve. It's one of the unique things about our country, being a relatively new country in the world. So you have the European countries, they've been around for centuries. We've only been around 200-something years.
Right.
Which is a great advantage for us, because it allows us to grow into these different roles. So at one time, you know, we were very isolationist. At another time, we weren't. Theodore Roosevelt's my favorite. Walk softly, carry a big stick. You know, Woodrow Wilson, policeman of the world.
Right.
You have these different philosophies, and we'll grow through that, and we'll grow past that when it comes to it.
Do you think that might be something about presidents that it's kind of difficult to tell how a president will actually act once in power, particularly because our form of government is so new and unique, and because we don't have a lot of precedents to go back and look at and see how they handled things?
Well, we've had 44 of them, so we have statistical evidence, or however you want to say it, anecdotal evidence. But, and this was the point I tried to make towards the end of my article about the underlying trust. I know a lot of what Obama says right now mm-hmm. can't be done. I feel like the healthcare can't go through our Congress in its current state. I feel like pulling out our troops in 16 months is going to be very difficult, if not impossible.
Right.
But it's those other things. You trust that he'll be fluid. You trust that he'll have the judgment to do the right things. This experience gets brought up, and ever since experience is brought up, you know, people have been talking about James Buchanan, the most experienced person to ever be elected to office. And he was a miserable failure as a president.
Yeah, that's true.
But there's just not enough. So you have to have faith that the person you're choosing, the person you're trying to elect, will do the right thing and kind of get past this rhetoric, kind of get past these policy issues.
So you think possibly that Barack Obama believes more in what he believes in than other candidates? In the sense that he's more willing, once he gets into office, to follow through with the principles that he's laying out now, the general principles that he's laying out now, than other contenders?
Well, I'm just going to try to trademark a phrase. Convictions will get you killed. I don't want somebody who's going to stick by their guns. That's one of the reasons I don't like Hillary, because she's going to try to ride her healthcare program through, and it's not going to work, because she tried riding the same healthcare program through.
Right.
Didn't work the first time either. I'm trusting him because I feel like he'll be flexible. He has been flexible. He said, you know, I've been wrong about certain things. I fixed it. As his campaign started, he was a different politician. Not different on the issues, a different politician.
Right.
He's adapted. He's grown with the role. That's something people didn't realize about Lincoln. Lincoln didn't make plans. He kind of saw what was coming at him, adjusted to it, and worked with it. And that's what you got to do. That's what Bush never has done. And that's one of the most frustrating things about him. He's never changed. He's never adapted. He's used the same sledgehammer approach on issues that sometimes might need a little more finesse.
You know, do you think then that aspect of it is something that he truly believes in? That maybe the other candidates, because they all say that they're willing to work with the other side, don't possibly won't follow through with as much?
It's not what you say, it's what you do. And there's strong evidence that he has worked across aisles. And I don't like to use that term loosely. But, you know, in the Illinois Senate, he's worked with Republicans. Not like Texas Democrats that George Bush worked with, but honest to God, Republicans.
Right.
To get things passed. And, you know, sometimes he's had to compromise, but that's the nature of politics. In this U.S. Senate, he worked with one of the most conservative senators ever, Richard Lugar from... I want to say Virginia, but I don't feel like that's right. That's okay. On some comprehensive policies. He's even worked with John McCain on finance reform, so he's willing to do it. You see it in what he's done.
You know, since you bring that up, one of the other things that it says on his website is that he's opening up the campaign, giving average Americans a chance to offer their opinions and information. It says that over 15,000 policy ideas have been submitted through the website. He also mentions on his site that if he's president, he'll have quote-unquote fireside chats, that he'll use mass communications to open up all the processes, make everything transparent. Do you think that is also part of that spirit of compromise?
It is. It's a necessary thing. I talk to a lot of people, and I get the sense of a lot of people. I'm an amateur journalist, I'll say that, because I'm still a student. But throughout my life, you know, I've always been a pretty good listener.
Mm-hmm.
And I hear frustration from people, and I hear a lot of sadness from people, because the government's for Americans. It's not to be ruled by other people. We're supposed to be part of the process. And for the past 8 years, nobody's talked to us. Nobody's tried to engage us in this process. Look at the tax rebates. Everyone knows that's a terrible idea. You give me $600 and we're going into recession, I'm not spending that. If I'm not spending that, the plan doesn't work.
Right.
But nobody said, how can we help you? What can we do? And all we want is to be honest. You're like, we know we're going to the recession. What do we as a people have to do to fix it? And we're willing to work with it. That's what's been missing for 8 years. And if that's what, you know, he said he's going to do, that's going to help him immensely in the general election.
So you think it's more of a, like, don't just throw us a bone every once in a while. Yeah. Let us actually make the meal with you?
Yeah, we're a land full of Christians. And one of the Christian tenets, you know, teach a man how to give a man a fish, he'll eat for a week. Teach a man how to fish, he'll eat for a lifetime. Right. It's the same thing. We've grown up on these principles.
I want to bring it back for a second to when we were talking about the imperialist ideas. Mm-hmm. And working with other countries. One of the big issues right now is our relationship with Russia.
And, Putin's a scary man, by the way.
He can be.
I think he's a smart man, but he's still kind of creepy.
Yeah, he was Times Person of the Year this year.
I read KGB and all that, though. You gotta be a little nervous, at least.
Well, I've heard that the new KGB, the last generation of KGB people, were not the same as the stereotypical KGB. It was very violent and during the Cold War era, but we'll leave that alone for now.
Maybe some other day, because I know I like to talk about stuff like that.
Anyway,
brings to mind Bond and all that.
Yeah, it's fun stuff. But Obama says on his site that he wants to work with Russia to take U.S. and Russian ballistic missiles off hair trigger alert, seek dramatic reductions in U.S. and Russian stockpiles of nuclear weapons, and set a goal to expand the U.S.-Russian ban on intermediate-range missiles so that the agreement is global.
Mm-hmm.
Now, do you think that he would actually be able to work with Russian leaders, whoever happens to be in office when elections come around for them, to be able to quell some of these problems that have been coming up recently, regarding, for instance, the missile base that the U.S. wanted to put in Poland, and the U.S. recognition of Kosovo,
yep,
most recently, which Russians were very unhappy about.
But at the end of the day, the Russians right now are very smart people. And what I was saying about Putin before, he's scary, but I think he has the best interests of Russia at mind. You can't fault him for that. But no, there's no reason for us not to be allies at this point, isn't it? We have the same enemies, terrorists, people who are trying to ruin our respective ways of life, or however you want to phrase that statement. I know it's kind of weird. But no. Why wouldn't it work? That's the question right now. Why wouldn't we try these things? It doesn't hurt to try to be diplomatic, does it? Is there a negative result to that? Not really, unless you slap the prime minister, but who does that anymore?
Well, and if you do, at least you got one off before you started war.
Yeah, but no, we need somebody who's more reasonable, and that's not the impression you get from our current administration, our current president. It's all or nothing. There's no, well, what can we do to you so we can get these things up? Or is there any way we could do both? Or how can we have a better conversation?
I see. All right, switching up a little bit. we'll get through this quickly. Obama wants to support a system that allows undocumented immigrants, talking about immigration now, who are in good standing to pay a fine, learn English, and go to the back of the line for the opportunity to become citizens. He also wants to work with Mexico to do more to promote their economic development so that illegal immigration will slow down. Two things I want you to comment on. Mm-hmm. One, how essential do you think it is that people who come to this country learn English. And I don't mean necessarily from a practical side, but from an institutionalized side, because right now there is no national language and there's nothing that absolutely says that to be here you must learn English.
No, there's not a law, but I think English is the national language, though, isn't it?
No, we don't have a national language.
I know that's weird. But it becomes part of becoming an American. It's part of the culture. That's the way I look at it. But okay. Even on a functional level, that does become very important, because we're not a Spanish... the majority of us aren't Spanish-speaking. And even though it's taught in the schools, it's not a mandate in the schools unless you take it for 2 years. And really, how much do you know of Spanish in 2 years?
Yeah.
But it's a big thing we have to deal with. These are a large group of people that need to be assimilated into the American process, like many immigrants before have been assimilated into the American process. And it's something a lot of people lose perspective on, because at one time, you know, we did have a large segment of our population who were strictly Italian-speaking people. Mm-hmm. And you notice as time goes on, they don't speak Italian anymore.
Right.
The same thing will happen with these people. I feel like we just have to wait it out.
It does happen, slowly.
Yeah, it takes... I think I've estimated it, personally estimated, it's like 2 or 3 generations.
It is, from what I've read,
yeah.
It's about that. I'm interested, though, to... I used it again. Oh, well.
If it works, go nuts.
I'm intrigued to hear what you have to say about whether... If it would be... If setting a precedent like this, through law that made immigrants learn English, if that would set a precedent that would lead possibly to other laws that might institute English as our national language, and if that happened, do you think that that would be a good thing, or do you think that multiculturalism, in the form even of language, is something that should be encouraged and that making it institutionalized should just be left alone?
Well, the big plus side of this, and this is something I think it really is a huge problem, is if you don't know English, you can't learn. You can't go to school and you can't figure things out. And by kind of mandating English, we're saying, come to our schools, we'll teach you and we'll give you an education. And education is one of the most important things in the world, really. But no, I don't really see the downside of having a national language. Many countries do. Canada has 2 national languages. It's English and it's French.
Mm-hmm.
England has 1 national language. It's English. It's something a lot of countries do. In the long run, I don't feel like it hurt us, because, again, I think these people are going to learn English anyways. They're going to learn it eventually. So
right.
Them's the breaks.
Cool. Now, here's something that I just thought was odd to read. He says here that we live in the most information-abundant age in history, and the people who develop the skills to utilize its benefits are the people who will succeed in the 21st century. Talking about the internet.
Mm-hmm.
And that's interesting because it seems to be a self-fulfilling prophecy for him, since his campaign's success is largely based on...
Hugely it's, based.
Yes, on the internet aspect of it. What do you think of the whole internet phenomenon as involved in the campaign process, and particularly with him?
Well, it's helped me learn a lot more about the political process. I spend probably about an hour and a half reading various articles a day about politics. And that's not something I would have been able to do a long time ago, unless, you know, you have access to a whole bunch of newspapers. But... No, it's, again, it's one of those things we're kind of evolving into. It's a new medium, we're getting used to it, and he's the second person to take advantage of it after Howard Dean, and he's taken very good advantage of it, if I must say. But it's also opened up the process tremendously. You have instances where you can check out people's stances more readily. Like, who would know, I'm just going to throw this out, who would have known Hillary Clinton's position on NAFTA if you didn't have the resources in front of you? You'd have to trust people's opinions on it. But no, you could go and look it up now. How would you know Barack Obama's experience if you couldn't look it up? How would you know he compared to Deval Patrick's speech unless you could look at it and see it for yourself?
And how would you know what we have to say?
Exactly. We're part of this medium. We're speaking on it right now. Big fan of the internet.
Woo! Here's one, I only have one or two more to touch upon. that I found particularly pertinent to me because I'm a little bit of a science geek.
Nice.
Yeah, and I was particularly looking for this in his site. He says that he wants to support the doubling of federal funding for basic research, changing the posture of our federal government from being one of the most anti-science administrations in American history to one that embraces science and technology. I find this particularly uplifting to me because science and technology, and he talks a lot more about it in here, tends to get left by the wayside a lot these days, and I personally find it almost offensive that candidates like Mike Huckabee, not to pick on the Christian candidate, but
why not?
he doesn't believe in some of the basic tenets of science that really do affect how our country is run.
My favorite statistic ever is we're one of two countries in the world where a majority of the population doesn't believe in evolution. The other one's Turkey. But yeah, that's one of those things. And that comment you just quoted, it sounds like a backhanded kind of comment about stem cell research and efficient energy research. And on those topics, you know, we're actually literally wasting embryos. We have them anyways. Why not research them or else they're going to get tossed? And on greenhouse gas, greenhouse emissions and energy standards, it's more than a planet thing. It's also our dealing with the world thing. If we want to be less dependent on people like Hugo Chavez or the guy in Iran whose name I butchered a little earlier, and we want to have our oil price, not have to worry about the oil prices killing us every week. I mean, I pay $45 a week in gas. That's a lot
that's
of
insane.
Money for me. And because I make, $390, and that doesn't get adjusted for the inflation that's going to hit us all pretty soon. Those are things that we need to be looking at, not from a social standpoint, not from a religious standpoint, not from any other kind of standpoint, except from a practical standpoint. These are practical implications. These are going to have practical implications on our future, and if we just ignore them, then we're really shooting ourselves in the foot here, aren't we?
Yeah, this is one place where I could not agree with you more.
I'm glad we have agreements once in a while.
Every so often. Is there anything that you would like to say about why you feel so strongly about your ability to trust him and about who he is as a candidate?
I've just got a few things I had to get off my chest.
Sure.
One of them is, being a young person, I'm 22, it's kind of difficult to put all this into perspective for me, because a lot of people older than me have said, you know, well, you're young, you don't understand, you know, this kind of thing comes and goes. That you don't know what he'll be like in the future. And, you know, that's right, and that's really a consequence I have to live with at this point. My option is either, you know, the devil you know or the devil you don't.
Sort of like Hillary's position on going to war in Iraq.
Yeah.
She thought it was a good idea at the time.
Yeah, and if I'm ever wrong, I'll be the first to admit that, you know, I was wrong, I screwed up here. But when it comes to politics, the devil you know, if you know it's a bad one, it's not one you want to deal with, and it's not a door you want to open. I don't want to open McCain or Clinton at this point. I feel like it's very bad for us. And on the other hand, talking to people, because a lot of people know I'm an Obama supporter. I'm not vociferous about it. Is that the right word?
That's one way to put it.
I'm not very vocal about
right.
it.
Right.
But, you know, I talk about it once in a while, and people engage me in it. I spend a lot of time defending him, but not on positions. Like, this is the first time that I've actually spoken a lot and at length about his positions. Sometimes it's, well, he's a Muslim, and I have to spend a lot of time saying, no, he's not a Muslim. Or it's like...
Dispelling rumors
and misinformation.
What
do you think about this picture? I'm like, he went to Kenya. You wear the wardrobe when you're there. They gave him a gift and he wore it. It's not a big deal to me.
And from what I read of that article, it was actually, you know, a good display of leadership for him to
Yeah, and that's one of those things. You know, you look at it and you know it's a good thing, but then you have people asking you about it and you have to defend it. But they never ask you about the issues, and they never ask you why you believe. And I spend a lot of time really defending him when I'd really like to spend more time promoting. And that's what he talks about. Why are we going to get in the dirt? Why shouldn't we lift ourselves up and lift up the discourse?
Well, this is something that that I believe in as well, which is why I wanted to hear what you had to say about the issues.
it's good to know things. I didn't realize how good it was until I started reading a whole bunch of stuff. Then you start to become more expansive. And don't get it wrong, we are headed for troubling times. And this is going to make this presidential election one of the most important, at least in the past 50, possibly longer than that, possibly since the Great Depression when we elected FDR. We do have a recession on. It's one of the truths that we're going to have to face. We do have a war going on. It's, again, a truth we have to face. And it's time for us to be Americans. It's time for us to step up. It's time for us to elevate ourselves, to inhabit this ideal, not just to say, wear the pin, not just to salute the flag, not just to do simple things. It's time to embody the spirit.
You know, there's a great R.E.M. line. It says, now is greater than the whole of the past.
It's true, isn't it? You can't change yesterday, but you certainly can change tomorrow.
It's true. Well, thank you very much, Cody.
It's been a pleasure.
It's been a pleasure for me as well. This is Brandon Buscelli, signing off for this episode of...
Perspective.
Perspective.
Rock on. Yes, we can. This has been Perspectives. Join us again next week for another great podcast. Until then, may the sun never set on your horizons.